feel exhausted after that introduction. That's mostly true, but it's not great. Okay. Get my technicals right. I think it's going to be hot. So yeah, no, it's good to be back here. It's a few years since I've been down this way, so it's nice to be back. And here's to do poetry, so that's what I'm going to do, mostly from the collection. As Michael said, it's In a Changing Light, published last year. It's an eclectic mix, mostly short, but I also tend to give a few words of introduction, which if people find that boring or annoying, sorry about that. Oh, by the way, Fighting Words, I highly recommend, endorse everything that was said. They're great. They do great work, so if anybody has the time to volunteer with them, it would be great. All right, a few short ones to start. They're mostly short, as I said, anyway. This one is called Footprints. My thoughts are chirping birds, but all the wings are broken. The will cannot find the way. The child is now a man, and all the glory fades. All I ask is for the storm long since started to be ended, for this restless soul to strike a steady beat. I want to skim across calm waters to reach the safer shore, from where I can look back in impish celebration, like the child who jumped across the stream and looked behind at the footprints he had left. And next one is, I suppose, footprints we leave, we can influence more than we might sometimes think, which is the idea behind this, if I can find it, and it's called Catching Dust. Dust that flies unseen in shaded places is caught astride a stream of filtered light before it settles into deep recesses where no beam again may ever shine. I snatch a handful of the passing particles, but for all I hold inside my palm, so much more is all the time within my grasp. There lies the difference between sailing in the light or resting in the dark. One that's newer, not in the collection. Poetry, great, it's a great thing. It's very subjective, as we all know. And it's also a very broad canvas. I discovered only a year or two ago this format, which is very old. It's an old French format called a triolet, which has eight lines, some of which are repeated. So there's really only five lines in it. And it's has a fairly strict meter and rhyming structure, and the other feature is it should take a turn around the fifth or sixth line. So this is my attempt at a triolet, and it's called Outsiders. They came with stories of the war and battles that would set them free to land upon a friendly shore. They came with stories of the war, shattered by our shuttered door, dangerous as the darkest sea. They came with stories of the war and battles that would set them free. Thanks. The where am I now? I'm going to have a long list here. It looks frighteningly long, but as I said, a lot of them are very short, so don't worry. Okay, if that was called Outsiders, this one could be called Insiders, but it's not. It's directed at certain sections, those sections of the media that, in my opinion, could do a lot more to dig for the truth, and it's called Ducking But Not Diving. It bores me now, all this skimming of the surface, like ducks skidding across water to pick up morsels thrown by some passerby who is only interested in a good photo shot. And this endless search for blame. Blame yourself for a change. Take your head out from between your headlines and your deadlines. Shove it underwater for a while. Come back and tell me what you find. Thanks. Staying with the news, a few years ago in the depths of the recession, I wrote this next piece, which, it was bad times, but the news was so awful. It was getting more depressing every day. I had this image of people sitting around in the newsroom searching out the most depressing stories they could find and then spending the day trying to make them even more depressing before they broadcast them. So this kind of, I suppose, could be the newsroom meets, I don't know what, Ireland's Got Talent or Eurovision or something like that. Anyway, here's the news. "Good evening," said the newsreader in a serious newsreader voice. "Tonight, the news will be different. We are calling it viewer's choice. So for one night only, viewers, we are going to let you choose the main headlines we will bring you in tonight's television news." He tapped upon the screen of his laptop and voice in steady tone said, "Here are the nominations. You can text us or tweet or phone. First up, we have the recession. When you vote, call it headline A. Preference will be given to those viewers who offer to pay to end this mean austerity. For the plan we deem best devised, the winner can forever say their solution has been televised. Next up, we have the trouble spots. Group together in headline B. Vote for the war you like the most with the outcome you want to see. It matters not which side you take or how many may have to die. There are gods enough to pick from. One of them can be on your side. Our final choice is headline C, for which we are giving no clues. We want you to choose the headline about any subject you choose. Remember that it's news we do. Our program is not like the rest. The story to make the headline will have to depress us the best. None of your positivity. We want nasty in headline C's. The pundits expect nothing less. The public wants value for fees." The newsreader raised both eyebrows as he looked straight into the lens. "These are the three nominations. When I end, the voting begins." Okay, this change of direction. This next one is, it recalls, I only wrote a few years ago, but it recalls one of my earliest childhood memories and still one of the most significant things to have happened in my life, and that was the arrival of electricity in my then rural childhood home. And the story was my father was out working, didn't know that the guys had come to make the final connection on the day, so the plot was hatched that we wouldn't light any lamps and see what his reaction was when he was coming in the when it was getting dark. So I, being the youngest, was given a leading role in this drama, and that's going to unfold. It was back in the day of the cowboy films and the depths of the Cold War, so there's a few passing references. Most of you are probably too young to remember any of that, including not having electricity, but anyway. this is the poem Undaunted by that. It's called Changing Light. "It was nearly dark when he came in from the fields, tired from the toils of the day, ready to complain about the tilly lamp still unlit. Would he have to light it himself? He asked of no one in particular. In the shadow of an empty space beneath the stairs, I stood primed. The men with the metal boots, their belts heavy as a gunslinger's, had spent what seemed like years digging holes to plant the creosote forest that stretched across the countryside. With giant spools of wire unfurled along roads and lanes and fields. I marvelled at how they scaled the heights of those black poles and worked at right angles to the ground without falling. Stuntmen all. In the countdown to dusk I waited, finger on the switch, as if to take its pulse, or like some general in the Kremlin with his thumb on the red button waiting for the order to push. The predetermined signal came from my mother at the table, and with all the strength in my bony digit, I flicked the magic switch. Outside, the dusk turned instantly to dark. Inside, the light would never be the same." Thank you. Hard to imagine the world without electricity now, all right? With all our gadgetry and everything. Although there's still about between a fifth and a quarter of the world's population that doesn't have domestic electricity. So, but for me anyway, that's one of the big things that happened in my life. I'd equate it with the internet, I suppose, in terms of the social consequences of both of them. Anyway, if that was my earliest memory, this next one is one of my earliest poems, and included in the collection, even though it was written about best part of between 40 and 50 years ago, but closer to 50 years ago. And the reason I put it in, I've dated it as well, because it was written as a futuristic piece at the time, and some of the things it references, I suppose, weren't as commonplace as they are now. Like computers were about the size of an office block where they did exist, and now we carry them around in our back pockets. And space travel was in its infancy. Now people are queuing up to buy tickets, one-way tickets even, to Mars and places. And China was the big political threat on the horizon, and China is, well, watch that space. What else? Yeah, some of the names are fictional, but there's, what am I saying? I can never remember which one is which. Peking, yeah, it's not fictional. It's now Beijing. So anyway, that helps to date it as well. Anyway, it's all called Progress. The main course is finished, and the family proceeds to the orchard. For dessert, they eat the ripening fruit from the trees. Beneath them, the 2 p.m. train streaks through. Father rushes to his private plane, shouting, "I'm late." Over the TV controls, he calls, "I won't be home for tea, dear." He is flying to Peking for an important meeting with the lunar ambassador to discuss business prospects. The 6 p.m. flight from Cape Mao, formerly named Cape Kennedy, is delayed because of a dust storm in Moon Se Ho. Due to the extended strike by computers in New York, concern continues to grow as to the amount of food left in their storeroom one, a quiet place once called the British Isles, but uninhabited since the afternoon of the last war. Latest reports say the minor famine in Europe is easing. Only 2 million have died since noon. Meanwhile, the building up of the planets proceeds, the plan being to inhabit the latter and to recultivate the entire Earth. This may be somewhat delayed, however, by the forthcoming war, expected to decrease the population by half. Nevertheless, the great universal progress continues. So just to follow that, a little more up-to-date version of the future. Which doesn't sound half as bad, actually. I wrote this one last November, and it was just after that week, or 24 hours, really, when two significant things happened. Leonard Cohen, poet and singer-songwriter, passed away, and Donald Trump became president-elect. And it was said at the time that Cohen had actually chosen to go then because of the other imminent development, but I think that's just fake news. Yeah, I know, terrible. But anyway, he did leave us with a great body of work, and one of his songs is called The Future, and I borrow from that here. And there's a word in this. I don't usually have to explain words in my poems because they're all very straightforward, so I'm told. Anyway, this word is anthomania, and I didn't know what it meant when I came across it. If anybody does, shout it up. I've never found anyone yet that does. Anyway, it's an intense or passionate, intense love of flowers. So I got it from an American poet I met when I was writing this, so I thought I'm going to have to a challenge to use it, so I did. Anyway, this is called Lullaby to a Lost Future. The sudden thud of darkness falling down impacted like a punch. A big kapow, as in some comic strip. Who's laughing now? This darkness shrouds another kind of clown. The poet who picked this moment to depart left us with his vision of disorder. Said he'd seen the future. It was murder. We wonder what he meant. Is this the start of time when freedoms will be put on hold? A portent of a deadly darker age? Blue light transfixed upon an empty stage. Plain truths denied by lies that will enfold and gather like a poison to be puked. But beauty still will flourish in the roots of trees no longer free to bear new fruits. Those with anthomania, when rebuked, in search of sleep will count each petaled bloom and dream of landscapes no one else can see, great landscapes, where again they will be free to light a light to lift the darkest gloom. Just another couple in this section. It's said that the best predictor of the future is sometimes the past, so the past is not very pretty, really. So Just this year, for example, we marked the 80th anniversary of the bombing of the town of Guernica, the Basque town in northern Spain that was bombed from the air during the Spanish Civil War in April 1937 by forces supportive of Franco at the time. And it was recorded as the first aerial bombing specifically targeting the civilian population in order to inflict the maximum damage. And it was market day in the town, so there was a lot of extra people on the streets, families, and one imagines a carnival atmosphere. I visited the town, that's a good few years ago now, but it was this time of the year, actually, in August. And the streets were full of people, the schools closed, families out and about, and playgrounds and cafes and lots of tourists, and there was a cycle race coming through, so another carnival atmosphere, definitely. And I just wrote these reflecting on the 2 days. And there's Picasso, of course, he unveiled his great painting, Guernica, in June of that year, so it's 80 years ago as well. So this is just a reflection on all that. It's called Guernica. With the pounding Atlantic still sounding in my ears, I sit and listen to the local sounds and hear waves of children's playground voices. From an open-air cafe, the constant crackle of their mother's conversation ebbs and flows, like interference between competing foreign stations on an old transistor radio. In the background, sharp and urgent whistle blasts as the red-berried policeman clears the way for the rush of a local cycle race. To my regret, I understand nothing of these spoken sounds, except the odd quick burst snatched from occasional passing French tourists. But whatever the dialect, such sidewalk scenes have a universal language of their own. Local gossip, last night's television, schools reopening soon, the price of clothes and books, the choice of subjects. It was probably much the same the day the other noise came, unheralded by any warning whistle, business as usual, streets uncleared, children and mothers and fathers alike barefooted, bareheaded and unprepared. An instant, an innocent sacrifice. The shock, like the cries in the silent after noise, has long subsided. But it has, and it will happen again. And staying in that geographic area, this next one records an incident that happened a couple of years ago. It was pre-Brexit, but I can't help looking at this now without thinking Brexit for some reason or other. But it's called Tinned Fruit. He stood in the queue for a boat at the edge of a Spanish sea, Union Jack rucksack on his shoulder. Not being ones to judge by a cover, we struck up conversation to inquire if we were in the right line for our desired destination. Yes, came the gruff and abrupt reply. That seemed to be that. As we examined the silent back of his middle-aged balding head, he suddenly spun around. You know, you're the first English speakers I've met here, he said, a mixture of relief and disbelief in his tone. The hotel is full of Spanish people. He sounded like he might invoke some unfair trading rules. And the other thing I can't believe, the olives they serve are out of a bloody tin. All right, time to get on to something much less serious and controversial. Love. This one is a sonnet form, and the subject is love itself, and it, there are various encounters, or at least my various encounters, and it's called Encounters. I might have met you once while on the road, but how was I to know you would be there? No map to guide, no picture to compare. So why would I have stopped or even slowed? And yet, if you had signaled me your code, I would have shyly shuffled, unaware that you and I could have so much to share. I'd still to learn what nature had bestowed. But later when we met, I knew you well, although I least expected you to be so blissful, yet so able to confound. Instead of catching me when first I fell, you put me in a boat that's still at sea, in search of shores which never may be found. And this next one, staying with the subject, well, it started life in my head as a love poem anyway, but I think it ended up more about me than anything else, I'm afraid, so I don't know what that makes it, but you can judge. It was a kind of a mixed up thing about from a mixed up time. So anyway, it's called, what's it called? The Night of the Swallow. She came as swallows might in the night, down from the mountain with heather in her hair. She was always there at sunset and at sunrise, with the splendor of both in her tender eyes. There's something sad about the world tonight. I understand the sky is void of light. They tell me that a man will come at dawn, saying, "Wake, arise, behold, I am the sun." But they cannot understand that I am the one. When the snow comes, I will start to build a palace of ice, which will be until time's end. It will stand a monument to my memory, depicting, as monuments do, a cold and false resemblance. But for those that want to see, they will know that inside this iceberg are corridors and caverns full of all the warmth and beauty the world could need. Water lapped upon the shore, tides of light rose before me. With a mighty surge, I climbed the highest peak and raised a flag, flying details of my life and the love which I had kept hidden from my lady of the summer. Turning away from the stage, my tears began to flow. Days later, I awoke in a strange room with a strange woman wandering around. Both of us had secrets that we did not talk about, though both of us confessed we must live at ease and not in doubt. But as in any revolution, the dream was clouded by continuing strife. I turned on a light and made some coffee. I could have walked along the canal, conjuring countless scenes in my mind, but I didn't. I went to the zoo. I threw nuts to the monkeys. They threw them back. I went home, made more coffee, strong and black. There's something sad about the way I feel tonight. It's as if I could be a master at my art, but dark clouds obscure the canvas from my sight. The paint falls to the floor like a flightless dart. She came in the fall, but I knew her as spring as I walked through her fields, soft and green in the morning dew. She was summer as I swam in her sky of blue. Now I walk down stone grey streets with withering leaves blowing, chasing my feet. I wonder if it's time to go home. It's winter, it's cold, it's starting to snow. Soon all streams will freeze and cease to flow. Evening fell as I stared, only to see veils of emptiness rise from my colourless TV. Even as the swallow flew, I too must be away. This one's just called Rumours. I could stay here forever, you said, as we lay entwined deep in our lover's bed, strong in each other's arms, safe and well out of harm's way, shutting out the news of tumours and all the other malignant rumours of the day. I could stay here forever, you said. I could stay here forever. Right, a few quick fire ones, even shorter than the previous ones. Call these my beer mat, from my beer mat selection, because they fit on the backs of beer mats, and the truth be known, they're written on the backs of beer mats as well. So the first one's called Listen. Everyone's talking about something. They all know where it's at. Nobody's saying the right thing. Everyone's sure of that. This is called Angles. Light casts many different shadows. How we see them depends on where we stand. They don't like that one. Well, I'll do this, it might make them happy. It's called Smile. A patch of wildflowers gleaming in a sudden burst of sunlight. What a difference a smile can make to even the most overcast of faces. All right, nearly at the end now, you'll all be relieved to know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do two or three more. This one is, when I get to my age, lots of things to reflect on and lots of time to do it as well sometimes. When I was a lot younger, though, myself and most of my contemporaries spent a lot of time talking actively about all the things we were going to do and how we were going to change the world. Nobody's ever done that since, I'm sure. But some of us had a go at it, and then we all went our separate ways. And now, a few of our survivors, when we meet up, we usually end up talking about how much we used to talk about all the things we were going to do. And that's the life cycle for you. It's called Smoke Without Fire. The doctor and the dentist greet the scientist. They drink a toast to olden days. In their glasses, reflections of their student years. Cheers. No cheering crowds hail the worker as he makes his way through narrow streets to meet his learned friends. They raise another glass, another past embraced. The conversation takes them back to dingy bars and dodgy all-night party places, to great debates on questions scarcely understood. The more they learned, the more they seemed to lose, but no one kept a balance sheet. They talk of when they plotted for the glory days to come, how everything would be different after the revolution, how it would be for real this time. There would be a call to arms, a conscription of words, an awakening. The voices of rebels would be heard over those of primates and presidents. The poets and the protest singers would write the new anthems. Everything would be different. No one saw the future creep up, becoming part of the past they meant to change. Now, in their pursuing way, it is those glorious days that raise the cheers when comrades gather to commemorate. So the moral of the story is, if you feel like doing something, do it. Don't just talk about it. The other thing about getting older is that, you can't do anything about it, first of all, but you have to work hard at keeping the important things at least on as even a keel as possible, and sometimes that requires new paths and everything. So this is called Obscuring the Dark. The sun makes light of the sea, then sets to the west with a fiery breath, taking one more day's light from me. My heart holds its beat in the sleep of the night, bringing comfort and calm to my mind, until dawn sends the moon off to rest for the day, and I wake to the tune of your lips on my face. The spark from each kiss keeps the embers aglow as the sun starts to dance on the sea. Each touch and embrace fan the flames as we go headlong deep down into the spray. The waves wash away our tracks in the sand, but we make a new path on a different shore. Though we bathe in the tide of a day that will pass, our love is the light that obscures the dark. Right, going to finish with a short one. Another short one. And I just want to say thanks to, I know Paul's not here, but thanks to him for inviting me. Thanks to Mikhail and Kieran for looking after me, and everyone else for that matter. Thanks very much for listening. It's great to see a full house for poetry on a Monday night, and I hope you enjoyed at least some of it. As Mikhail said, the book is available in all good bookshops and online, but it's also here at a cheaper price, so it's going for a tenner or nearest offer. I'm prepared to negotiate, especially on a Monday night. You know, maybe a lot of people spent money in Dublin yesterday unsuccessfully. Sorry about that. I had nothing to do with it. next 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time is the real big match. So where am I? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to just finish with this little poem, and it's called My Wife Thinks I'm at a Poetry Reading. My wife thinks I'm at a poetry reading. The truth is, I am. But I keep all my best words, all the hair in my chest words, all my bare and undressed words, all the never mind the weather words, all the keeping us together words, all the under my breath words, the no need to be said words, the all in my head words. I keep them all, like the best wine, except not for the last time, but like every time is the first time. And so, for my next poem, Anna, that one's for later, when I get home. Cheers, thanks very much.